Many of you are building teams, and whether that team is small or larger, right, one person or 10, we run into the issue of really managing performance and compensation and career paths. So in some of our other sessions, we've talked about strategy and structure of teams and organizational design and why these components are so important. What Tiffany and I really want to break down for you in this session is, right, fundamentals of and strategies for actually managing compensation, performance, and career paths. So we'll talk through some of the strategies and best practices. And as usual, Tiffany will really share how they've applied these in their firm, the effect that that's had, and how it's really elevated and accelerated their success. So Tiffany, always appreciate you guys being so willing to share your examples. The three things we really want to talk about, because you cannot manage what you cannot measure. And so when we talk about people models, a lot of it's intangible, not like the compensation in terms of the hard dollars, but how we earn it and how we make more and what's the contribution in exchange for it, right? How are we measuring performance? What are the standards? And what is the path to career growth besides, right, sit here for another 365 days, click your heels together and hope it all works out. So as founders and leaders in firms, we have a lot of control over our destiny. But as we build teams of people behind us, it's really helpful for us to understand that they don't have that same clarity and control. So it's really important that we sit in this space of doing that translation, helping them understand what are the standards for compensation, for performance and career growth. And how do we make sure that that is articulated in clear and common language so that everybody's really aligned, that as contribution increases, compensation increases, and the alignment is so strong that we as leaders feel really great, because if we're doing those things, it means that things are working and we're rewarding people for shared success. So I think we can all agree that that is a worthy goal. So this is one of the infographics we put together. It's one of the resources that you can reference just as you think about this lesson. How to manage your team is really about overcoming mindset blocks and really receiving leadership and management training. Like, how do we show up as leader? How do we have clear conversations? Tiffany talks a lot around, right, how you set those purpose and values and culture. So how do we set roles, culture, and a strategy for growth? So those are the five things we want you to think about. How to reward your team, how are you going to define compensation, and how are you going to cover perks and benefits? And then the third piece is, oops, sorry about that. Wow, where'd we go? There we go. How to grow your team, right? How do we allow for professional development? How do we create those career paths that we all know are so important? And then how do we make sure that we have regular check-ins, not necessarily performance reviews where we check the boxes, but as Tiffany will talk about, how do we create meaningful points of connection about what the company and the role need and how we can work together for that person in that role to be successful in a way that we all feel good about. So that's just a quick infographic and checklist resource that you guys can use as you reference it. But let's talk a little bit about mindset. What are some of the challenges when you think about mindset? Tiffany, I know you've gone through this so much with Jared over the last few years. What are some of the things when you think about mindset around leadership that you guys have had to deal with?
Yeah, I mean, a few things. I think what, like, the biggest one for me is just like the added weight of being responsible for people and their livelihoods and really just trying to own like how they're showing up and all of those pieces and truly learning there's a co-ownership to the relationship and setting forth right transparency and communication and meetings that allow that to happen is really important. I'm also a recovering people pleaser. And that's really important as a leader, because as a leader, my job is, I think I'm recovering because I'm actually in the position and I've learned that it doesn't please people when you are trying to shield like information or help them in their feelings or assuming you understand their feelings versus like my job as a leader is to give you the information to make your next best step. Like, and sometimes that's not like the best information, but the only way that you're going to get there is for you to have that information. Otherwise, we're going to grow at odds. We're going to grow apart and it's going to come to a head in a not great way. And so really learning that like, you know, there's co-ownership in this. Like, my job is to give you the information. It's the same as what we do for our clients. We happen to be in an industry where we have to do the same thing. I'm going to be here to have the honest and hard conversations, as well as be here to do the celebrations and rewards along the way. And both of those are the right thing to do. So those have been some pretty big internal shifts. I still to this day take it really personally when things don't work out for people, because it's people. I've learned the tools and places to be like, okay, like, this does happen in business. The business is the Northern Star. Here's how this is going to work, and it's going to be all right. But it is hard when you're working with people you really need those tools to be as effective as possible. So when something's hard with a person, like, I have my strategies and my people to go to have those conversations and get in the right headspace, because one person for our team means that if I stay focused there as a leader, I'm missing the other 12 that are depending on me to make really good decisions for the firm. And so really paying attention to the whole picture.
Well, we always talk so much about, right, meeting the needs of all the stakeholders. It's not just you as founders, it's your team, it's your family, it's your sanity, right? It's your bank account, it's certainly your clients. So Tiffany hit on a number of things, and this is just a topic that I feel so strongly about, because is there anyone here who would not agree that managing people is the hardest part in a business? Like, if awesome people would just show up and do things the way that we think in our head, like, this shiznit would be amazing. And when that happens, man, it's magical. But if we're honest, that's where we exert a lot of our efforts, massaging and manipulating and managing around that. And what we really want to share with you today is there is a formula for making it easier and more effective and more enjoyable. Not perfect. We're talking about people. And the reason that this will always take attention and awareness is because we are talking about the intersection of incredibly important things to people: their money, their finances, and how they invest their lifetime to get the kind of life they want. People, money, and feelings are always ripe for tension and strife, because it's people, their money, and feelings. And we know, if you've been here at Limitless for more than 7 days, you know that people aren't rational at all, at all. And so our job as leaders is to sit squarely at the intersection of that and create standards that are clear and compelling, so that people understand how they, right, navigate this relationship with the firm. The mindset piece is, what do you need to do to put yourself in that space? Tiffany and I, God, we feel all the feels. So we are people pleasers. We never want to be the bad guy. We never want to hurt anyone's feelings. And man, if you're our friend, we will let you work here way too long after things go sideways. Like, and if I have to err on being too good a human and being too bad a one, I will take that. But to Tiffany's point, there is a cost. It's in service of something, some story, some insecurity, some fear, some discomfort. Like, we're all human. We do this stuff. But Samantha's nodding, right? Like, we all know there's a cost. We know it. We just don't like it, so we avoid it. We don't want to be the bad guy. We don't know how people are going to react, and we're worried about what will happen. And so we consistently, in micro little ways, compromise, getting clear about the vision and the values, communicating that, and not just holding people to that standard, but starting with us. That's the greatest work we get to do, is holding ourselves to that standard. So that's my challenge to you. That's what I'm always asking myself to elevate around. And it's real work, by the way. And that's the invitation for you. Can we really acknowledge our mindset as leaders? What has been helpful to get us here is likely not going to be what gets us to the next step. Now it's about, how do we create strategies and structures that allow other people, right, to help create success that's less dependent on us? And that is a massive shift in our mindset. It's also a massive shift in our methods. So now we're going to talk about some of the practical pieces that show up. Tiffany also said something that I actually wrote down. You know, when we think about, like, if we're not people pleasers, we get to be command and control, right? Where we're not necessarily the nicest people, or we're constantly chasing new things and we can't, like, create consistent structures and standards for our team to follow. So that's the invitation for you, is to really sit in this moment of leadership curiosity And ask yourself, how has your mindset, where has it been abundant and empowering and aligned with your vision? And where have there been gaps, right? Where are there stories or things that shrink you that we really have the opportunity to get clear and conscious around so that we can make committed decisions to step over that? And you're going to have the templates, the tools, and the tactics after today to go implement these ideas. It's, are you going to have the clarity and the fortitude to make decisions and apply the ideas that we teach you, right? And that's why we're here outside of retreats to help you do that. So don't hesitate to reach out. So you're navigating two things, as Tiffany pointed out, how you show up and how they show up. And in the absence of some clear and common language, a system, a standard in the middle, can you see where that's ripe for tension and problems? So that's why those standards and structures become so important, because you create a clear and common language. Now we're all speaking, right? Same sheet of music. We know what the bar is. Now we're objectively managing to it. And Tiffany can tell you, and Will, that's where you create a lot of positive change in the culture. Managing people's really human, but we want you to start to think about it like a business system. What are your performance review processes? How are you doing in between check-ins? Those are equally, if not more valuable. What's your career pathing and your compensation plan? Do you have your job descriptions and your org chart modeled out? So again, there's loads of guidebooks and examples as you go to implement that practically. What Tiffany and I really want to talk to you about is how do you start to dive into that? So step one is creating an organizational chart. What, right? If you go back to the building and managing teams, what does that organizational design model look like for your firm? Now we're going to take each role in that model and we are going to create standards and structures around it, right? What's the outcome that position creates? What are the key areas of responsibility? We'll help you define those by level, right? Your level one paraplanner is not the same in terms of contribution or role duties as your level three paraplanner, right? So how do you move up through those? So lots of examples of all the different positions, ours, many of the coaches, Tiffany and Jared's in the library. So I don't want to spend a lot of time here, but like, this is job one. Here's why it's important. We don't understand why it's important. I have literally interviewed firms with hundreds of people. Two things that people say to me every time: what could the firm do to help you better succeed in your role? Every time, I kid you not, vision and a job description. And I have sat across from principals and founders of very large firms, shared, hey, everybody on your team wants these things, and had a person literally say to me, why do they need that? Why do they need that? They've been here for 3 years. They know what they do. And we do in terms of tasks and moving things from one side of the desk to the other, but all humans need purpose. We want to show up and invest our time. We want to contribute. That's what all the research says about why people stay. They do interesting and challenging work. They feel like they're making a meaningful contribution and they like the people they work with. So our ability to simply put it in writing and say the outcome of this job is to deliver an exceptional experience that makes clients feel like they have a trusted partner they can turn to anytime, and here are the boring bullet points by which you do it, is a lot better than, hey, just show up, do a good job, and I'll send you a paycheck. We want to create that meaning for people, because meaning is emotional. It's what people invest in, creating shared outcomes. So the more you can define that, the better. Tiff, do you want to talk a little bit about defining compensation model and kind of the tenets of that and some of the changes that you all made there?
Yeah. So compensation model there, this is similar to, I feel like, marketing. There's a lot of systems that work and not all systems work. So you really have to find the comp model that is right for you as the firm. Again, your business is the Northern Star. You are a very important component of that and leading your firm. And so really thinking through what is that financial model that's going to support you along the way. And there's grace for tweaking and refining it along the way. As your team grows, it might shift. I think we've shifted our comp model maybe 4 times over the last 5 years. And not in a big way. We got really clear on salary pretty quickly, and we still utilize that model today. So for instance, we use the Investment News study. It comes out in October. We contribute to the data as well. So you guys can do that if you want. You can contribute to the data and then you get access to the report. But thousands of RAs across the nation, or hundreds, report into it. And we utilize that. We're like, this is a really good study for all of us as a team to have a benchmark in where compensation's coming in. What are those find roles. I mean, they must have 50 positions totally different. So there's an interim one, we can put it together. And so we use that as the standard for our salaries. We built in, we've talked to our team about it, but you can do it where it's built into salary. You can have it where it's maybe this plus bonus. We do 80% of the total compensation based off the study in salary, and we do 20% as a bonus. We've been very clear that we're not looking to do punitive bonuses. Like for us, like those bonuses are, and there's clarity in their role, is if you're coming and daily and you're performing at what we ask, then that bonus comes. The thing that would take us out of there is if for whatever reasons revenues of the firm dropped drastically. So it's a really great incentive for us it's a really great incentive for the team. And that 20% gives us leverage in those moments when the markets maybe drop 30%. And we're like, okay, before we let anyone go, we have 20% off the top. So we've really learned to love that model, and our team's happy. Right? When other people may be worried about jobs and all of that, we have other levers to pull, and they're aware of that prior to making those decisions. But that may or may not work. Profit sharing can work, or based on total net new revenue could work. And then incentives of all forms of compensation. So true story, last year I had one of our team members come to me and he said, "Hey, I've been told not to come to you as a boss. Like, but I want you to know that I went and interviewed with another firm because I was just curious on what was out there. And I got this opportunity, and it's 23% more in compensation." Now, we already know from a firm that we are competitive in compensation. And he was a new dad. He had a ton of flexibility. We have Flex Fridays. We have total agency. We have unlimited PTO. He was in a seat with a very clear, defined position, and he had some growth opportunities. So we felt really good about that. And he's like, I was told if I was going to have this conversation, I need to be ready to pack my bags. And I was like, okay. And I was like, you don't need to. Like, we are truly here as a mission to create an environment where talented people can thrive. And if you can thrive in another environment, do we give you the stepping stones to get there in a really great way? And he's like, "Are you serious?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Listen, study here is in which, like, there were some lacking clarity pieces in his position that we had to get clear on." And I'm like, "We're not in a place that we can offer you more compensation. But as a brand new dad, you do have flexibility, right? You're working from home, you get Fridays off, you get those types of things. This firm that you're going into, how do they support those things?" And he had come back to me and he said, and I was like, "But we need to make sure that you're really happy here. So let's have this conversation. Tell me what you need for you and your family to make this decision along the way." And he came back and he was like, "One, your conversation was everything for me to make this decision. And number two, you're right." So he declined a 23% increase in compensation, which the studies start right about there. So I think if it was 25, we probably could have been in trouble. But those, including like all forms of compensation, that matters. Our environment and the work that we've created and the clarity around position, you know, your seat, the flexibility, it's giving you the permission to balance what's really important to you, which is being a brand new dad and being there for your daughter while also doing work that is, you know, that you're really great at. He wasn't ready for a promotion. There wasn't that opportunity, and it was great. So being and defining your comp model and just having a healthy relationship with it. Here's why we do it. Here's the way we do it. Here are all those things. And if there's new opportunities to refine it, then it's great. But that non-comp stuff, it matters, and having clear definitions around that too, and supporting it and engaging it. We celebrate people's time off. Like, it's really important. We want our advisors to be healthy and whole. And so we talk about those things. We bring them up in meetings. So defining it is really important. One thing is when we had it less clear, the conversations that we were having with our teams was a lot around, "I feel I'm worth this." And we're like, "Maybe you are, maybe you're not. We feel this is where it's at." And that's a worth conversation that has no place in what we're doing. So the clearer we got and having, "Here is how we base our compensation. This is research for you done across the nation. If you have other research that you would like us to look into, feel free to send that." But it's gotten into a, they know the compensation. They know where other people are most likely structured based off of that philosophy, which creates, no more comparison. it's created data points to have a really good conversation that's truly structured in their seat, the next seat, an opportunity in the business, and not feelings around what people feel they are worth or what's happening. And because that is not a fun place to be in compensation.
Yeah, you never, as we talked about at the start of this, you don't ever want to be in a situation where you were sitting on high, granting someone what they want or perceive they need or not, because it becomes a you versus them, and you will almost always lose in that proposition. If we can make it about that common language, a third-party standard that was defined in advance, now it becomes about the market and the role. And what you really heard Tiffany insinuate in a really powerful way was that culture is a form of compensation, right? That openness, that, and again, that someone may have left in that situation, but Tiffany and Jared can't be in the, again, they have to make sure comp is competitive as circumstances evolve, but they can't be held hostage to every one person's need. How many times have we heard, like, I bought a house, I need more money. I had a baby, I need more money. And I'm like, well, your life circumstances don't roll up to the business, because the business can't, it's not sustainable that way. So we want to create those third party standards. As mm-hmm. Tiffany pointed out, the cool thing about compensation is you can do anything you want. You want to make sure that compensation aligns and drives the kind of behavior you want at a firm level and an individual level. You want different behavior from a service advisor than you do from a rainmaker, than you do from a paraplanner, than you do from an operations manager. And so I'm also a fan of really simple comp plans. If you need a 17-point spreadsheet and analysis, then it's not motivating to people, because their brain just needs to go, X happened, A plus B equals C, I make Y, ooh, that's motivating. You know, the 19-point spreadsheet that they get at the end of the year isn't motivating. So this is where subjective bonuses become such a problem, because they become entitled bonuses. The brain simply says, I was here for a quarter or a year, that's what earned me the bonus. And then at some point it just becomes expected, AKA entitled. And then we get in these situations where, right, we get resentful or we're not clear. And that's where really updating your comp plan to define those standards becomes really important. So however you define it, and we can talk about this as you apply it, again, lots of examples as you're doing it, please reach out. Base, right? What's your base? You want that to be based on the market, what's competitive. That has been going up of late, if anyone's been paying attention. And you want it to be based on, right, where you want to be philosophically. Do you want to be in the average with bonus compensation and profit sharing that gets you in the top quartile? Do you want to be in the top quartile with bonus and or profit sharing that gets you above that? Do you want to be, you know, average, but you've got such a great environment that, like, that's what you're going to lean on? And there's no right or wrong. You just want to set your strategic standard. Like, what's the standard for compensation and how are we setting it? So, right, Tiff and Jared have a defined way that they can articulate consistently and objectively to the team. What kind of bonuses are you going to have in place? I'm a huge fan of dual bonus structures. And what I mean by that is, over the years, having designed hundreds and hundreds of comp plans, I've learned a couple of things. One, you don't want to manage to the lowest common denominator. If we design compensation plans where everybody gets bonuses, no matter how everybody performs, your high performers over time tend to have a real issue with that. Right. So people who are high performers like to understand the risk reward scenario between that performance. We also don't want to create a sea of selfish humans who only care about their performance or their clients, right, to the detriment of the firm. So that's where we like to implement, right, firm or team level bonuses that really support kind of that team approach. So again, there's different ways you can do that. As Tiffany mentioned, you can align bonuses to anything. You can make it a percentage of salary. You can make it a percentage of revenue, new revenue. You can make it a percentage of profits. You can tie it to many key performance metrics, new growth, share of wallet. So it will depend on what are the underlying behaviors you want to drive by role. And as you get to those specifics, again, please reach out so we can have some of those conversations. But ideally, you're going to want to look at some level of individual bonus compensation and some level of team or firm compensation to align everyone, right, to the common goals and the common good. And then, as Tiffany pointed out, healthcare, health and well-being, right, spas, massages, birthday flowers, days off for nonprofit work, catered meals, continuing education. What are the things that people value outside of what shows up in their paychecks? Oftentimes, a little bit of allocation goes a really long way. So we have like a comfort fund, we call it, right? For example, where there's a certain amount that everyone gets every year to invest in things that they feel like make their job more productive or comfortable. Like, hey, I think I want a dual monitor, or somebody wanted a fancy chair. I was like, great, everybody gets a comfort fund and they can decide how they spend it. Then I don't have to feel bad about saying yes or no about those little extra things, right? It's just a little perk, but people really like it. So what are those little ways, financial and non-financial, that you can really let people, right, that you can, quote, reward people for that contribution? Compensation in general, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you'll have base, performance, recognition, and then some version of perks and benefits, benefit perks, growth opportunities. The conversation we always have around just rate your cash compensation, right, total comp when you put it all together, is if you're earlier in your business and your economics, right, there's often not as much money there. And so we have to make choices about who we hire and what we can pay. Sometimes we, right, we're really trying to look at how much do we really want to invest? What's market comp for a role? And the thing we always say is if you pay peanuts, you'll get monkeys, right? So you don't have to pay at the tippy, tippy, tippy top of the scale, but you have to be really honest with yourself about what relevant compensation is in the marketplace, right? It used to be that giving people a remote environment was a huge perk. Now it's kind of becoming an expected perk. It's like not a big deal. It's sort of like almost table stakes in a very competitive marketplace, right? So now you don't necessarily have the, no, you have to come in lever to pull, right? So how do we get what we need? So we're really having to look at compensation through a whole new lens. We're looking at managing performance through a whole new lens, as Tiff and I can tell you a lot about. When your teams are no longer in the same office every day, bumping elbows, right? How you evaluate and manage performance and create all those synergies is a whole new level of effort from a leadership perspective. So again, there are examples in the library. We can talk about the individual components, but in general, what you're going to find is, and if you want to get updated information as you're designing this, you can ask ChatGPT or you can reach out to us. We've got the investment news data. Here was the data as of last check. In general, when you're looking at things like advisor roles, for example, you're going to look at, so here are some examples of these compensations. And again, they may have gone up a little bit since we last did this. It's changing on a weekly basis at this point. But the idea is, can you create a standard where you can define it in clear and simple terms and then define the standards by which people earn each of the components in clear and simple terms so that it's the clear line of sight, as we talked about, right? If I contribute in this way, this is what I can expect my total compensation package to look like, right? Then framed within the overall career opportunity. Compensating advisors, Tiffany, you I know you guys will talk a little, I'd love to have you talk about this. The number one question that I get over the years is, how much should I pay advisors? And again, depending, it used to be a lot based on your geography, a little bit less now. Overall, the percentage of compensation tied to direct costs, right? Cost of goods, you are the equipment in an advisory firm, in an advice business, is about 40%. So if you think about law firms, for example, lawyers are expected to bill at least 2.5 times their salary. That's the minimum bar. 40% times 2.5 is 100%, right? So that's sort of in service firms, that's in general the standard. If you add sales costs and marketing costs and in benefits, it can get up to 50-ish. And again, the numbers change a little bit each year, but that's a really good general benchmark, is about 40% of your overall revenue should go to or be allocated to advisor compensation, including you. Now, as you hire, Tiffany will tell you, that gets a little bit out of whack sometimes as you hit those growth thresholds, which is why you want to manage your performance and benchmarks, right? So you can make sure that they're coming back into line. Tiffany, do you want to talk a little bit of just about compensating advisors and the model that you guys have put in place and just sort of the how that's helped create clarity for the team?
Yes. So when I first came into the team, there was a level of profit sharing that that was no longer effective. And so we really had to sit there and make those shifts of like, what was going to be more perspective. And the reason it wasn't was kind of interesting. We were now a second generation firm. We had big growth goals. We had to do a lot of investment. And one of the thing was, well, when it's a profit share, the team's like, ooh, if we're going to make that investment in that person or this technology, like that could bring down my bonus, which was so fascinating. Because we're like, oh, well, that's not in alignment with where we want to go as a firm. Like we want you to feel really good, but we don't want you to like, you're not in a, you know, you're not in a seat that makes sense on like why we would need this investment or how that's going to create the direction that we're looking to go. And we can't have that be a punitive or disconnect as a team. And so over time, we've done a couple of different models, but we are base salary for everyone across the team, including Jared and myself. It's based off of that investment news study. 80% of that is built into the base. 20% of that is built into bonus based off of job description performance. It's more individual performance than team performance, but all of those components kind of end up tying a little bit. Based off of different seats, there are a couple individual contributors. There are a couple that are super collaborative. We had to have a level of flexibility in that, which comes into really clear, like, what is your performance metrics that we're looking at on a quarterly basis. And then last year, as we went from really focusing in on building operational leverage and excellence, and now we're really in a team, like in a growth format, we're doing incentive comp based off of new revenue, net new revenue to the firm. Everybody gets to participate in that, not like both advisors and operations. We're really looking to maintain a very collaborative, celebratory experience for our entire team. So there's different percentages in that based off of who onboarding clients, they're taking on more work. So we want our advisors to be really excited about taking on new clients. When we didn't have that, the incentive comp, new clients were like, well, I get paid the same. And now I'm expecting to manage more households, right? Like we don't want that disconnect either. We want excitement about what that is creating. So we have it has to hit a couple pieces of criteria, like a level of profitability in the firm is one of them. And then net new revenue, which we're considering that more at like, what are new client revenues in versus client quits, because that's in the control of our team. Any sort of client quit is death of a client. We're not looking to penalize them on that, even though you can. We've just created clarity around that because we're really like, what's in our control to grow as a firm, retain opportunities? How are we going to go do that? Maybe over time that'll evolve, but our team feels really good about it right now. That's where we're at. We have the base, the 20% or the 80% base, 20% bonus, and the comp that's beyond that.
And Tiffany made a lot of really good points there that I want to really tie back into the overall structure, which is ultimately compensation drives behavior, but that behavior is different in different roles, right? If you have a firm growth bonus and you're a service advisor, maybe not that motivating. And again, culturally, we're assuming you have the right people on the bus, right? Compensation plans will not motivate the wrong people. They won't, unless they're bad. And then you'll be in the news and we don't do comp plans like that around here. What comp plans can do if we're not careful is demotivate good people.
Yes.
Right. So you can put money in front of someone and their behavior will change for between 3 and 4 weeks, but eventually their behavior underlying will kick in. So we have a tendency when we're dealing with compensation, when we don't get what we want from people, we'll often throw money and bonuses at them as a carrot to entice them to raise their level of performance. Anyone have a story about that actually working long term? No. Because, right, the short-term behavior will change, but long-term, right, and then we're in this vicious cycle of bribing people to operate at the level that we want them to operate versus holding ourselves and them to the standard of managing to a standard. So one, just understand, if it's an ops manager, you might want to have, right, their base, their individual bonus might be tied to profitability. But if they're a service advisor, it might be tied to retention and satisfaction and share of wallet and referrals. And if they're in a rainmaking capacity, it'd be tried to like net new assets and growth and right, maybe new business opportunities and ambassadorship and brand equity in the market. Like there's a lot of things that you can start to measure there. overall in advisor roles, which is right where people have the most questions, you're going to look at about 40% of comp. The issue is, like, if you have someone managing 500,000 in revenue, that's about 200,000 in total comp. And that still works in terms of right where the market is in terms of advisor compensation these days. Where you're going to notice it's going to pinch a bit is when you're bringing that entry level or that first advisor on that's managing 100 or 150,000, where you used to be able to hire that person for 50 or 60,000, that, like, the comp has kind of bumped up on those entry level positions. So it's a bit more of an investment in that first person. So that's where you really want to look at what's the level of person relative to the amount of revenue they can manage relative to their comp. So this is where career ladders become really important. We will often change the individual level of bonus at each level, right? So a level one advisor, right, in that 40% might get a base. And then the gap between that base and 40% is how they would earn that bonus, but it might be a smaller percentage at level one. It might be 10% of my base salary. Right, at level two, it might be 20%. And at level three, right, it might be that 30% to get them to that full level. So again, if they're a service advisor or a rainmaking advisor or a hybrid role, that's where you're going to want to look at how you're designing your base and your bonus compensation relative to the variables of what are the behaviors that you want to incentivize. Not because you can bribe people into the right behaviors, but because we want to align the motivation so that we're not demotivating people, right? So that our success and their success are very clearly aligned to them and their brains. Because if that's the case, we spend a lot less energy trying to convince them, persuade them, control them, and manage them, right? If we get it aligned, it tends to be a lot clearer. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes. Stephanie, could you move the Fathom note taker just so we can see the
calculator? Oh, I'm sorry. It's over there. Yeah. Rule of thumb, 40%, right? So this is why if you look at other professions, it's about, right, in law firms, as I said, you're going to have to build 2.5 times, like 40% times 2.5 is 100. Again, depending on how high you get up the ladder, if you're managing teams, those percentages might change. But in general, as a business, there's a maximum that you can afford to spend on each role to make sure the business is sustainable. And that's where we need to make sure the revenue obviously supports the compensation plan. If it doesn't, we need to go back, right, and look at the client model, which we've talked about a lot. So as Tiffany shared, they look at their total compensation as a package and a philosophy, as 80% of that is sort of, right, base and predictable. And that 20% is going to be performance-based at the individual team or firm level, right? So they're creating alignment and investment in the overall, but still making sure that the significant part of salary is, right, in this modern age, right, in a professional service firm, salary-based. And that's where those career ladders, you might start to shift that as someone moves more into a rainmaking role. You would cap that salary and have more and more of their compensation based on growth of revenue. All right, team of happy high performers is built on, right, a lot of sort of cultural norms, which Tiffany talks a lot about, and I think really make a great point. Alignment, right? We need shared vision and goals to make sure that what we're contributing is tied to the rewards. I cannot tell you guys, no joke, I have client stories where I've literally been, right, in a firm, sitting down with the team, and they're literally telling me, this was probably 15 years ago, we're really tired of him walking through the office and telling us about his $40,000 bathroom remodel when we can't get, like, good raises. If people feel like you are asking them to work harder to make you richer, they are not going to be motivated. They're just not. And so again, that's where creating clarity around how your success, shared success, becomes their success. Notice what Tiffany said that is so powerful, which is, right, we're in the business of creating wealth for our clients. We want to be in the business of creating wealth for our team. If you have that culture as a firm, you're going to get amazing people who want to invest and contribute, but we have to show up and make that really clear to them, not just in what we say, but in what we do, right? So how do we create that alignment? How do we create compensation plans that really do that? How do we involve them? How do we get them to collaborate? How do we hold them accountable? To Tiffany's point, if we're people pleasers and we put plans in place and people don't meet the standards and we keep them around or we keep paying them or we give them the bonus, what are we teaching them? that they just have to tolerate me coming in, being upset, rolling my eyeballs, and giving them the bonus anyway, which tells them what for next time. So when we don't sit in that space of leadership and we get frustrated with them, we really need to sit in the space of getting clear with ourselves about how we're showing up and creating a culture of holding people accountable for how they show up. And that's hard to do when you feel like it's a competitive environment and you don't have unlimited compensation resources. But I think Tiffany and I are probably in violent agreement that finding the right people, right, that really align with that culture, that's going to make the compensation an additive, not, right, something you're, you know, you're not always like at the mercy of and the hostage of, right, the next level of compensation. Let's see if I can click this forward. We talked about this in one of the earlier sessions around growth and advancement. Tiffany had talked about kind of the career ladders. Tiffany, do you want to walk through how you created those? I think your example is in the next slide. But do you want to talk about the power of career ladders to creating that sort of clarity around career opportunity?
Yeah, this was really important. Growth is just, as you said, investment of where they're coming every day and who they are and what they're looking to contribute to and their own, all of those things. And so career ladder, it was really, really important. Ours, somebody asked me in the previous session, like, do you do it on a time base? Like they have to sit in a seat for a certain number of years. We don't. However, the first, like, there are times where, like, as long as that is why we are stability as a firm, because then that creates the clarity and opportunities for the team and our internal mission. We create the environment where talented people can thrive. The goal is this: we're all alive and make those moves when they're ready and have that ownership on their side. But you can come in. There's a partnership path on both sides, client facing and operations. And that varies for each seat. For an advisor, they can come in as our like almost second seat advisor. And then there's a base firm, then that creates opportunities for those leads. And then as those leads grow, it could be that they take a management position over our entire growth and advice category and partner. So those are different paths. There's interim steps. Sometimes it feels like such a big, like, how do you go from a second seat to a lead? And so if we find that somebody is really kind of more in that senior role or has the opportunity, maybe they're as an advisor taking on 25 client team, there's like, we have an interim step for that, because there's sometimes these moments of like, those are such big leaps. And as a firm, we can support maybe a smaller step than that. Career path that I created for a marketing position we had internally. And a big part of it was, is that the marketing position? Yeah. She came with a conversation regarding compensation that says, I feel like I should be paid as a director. And then I was like, man, you don't do director work. And that comp is really high. And she was looking at it from a broad perspective and not an industry perspective. And these things. So we had a huge, I was like, great, we're going to put this in play. We're going to go out, do the research. We're going to build what's a manager, what's a director. I'm going to be very clear, as a firm, we don't need a director. Like, we're never going to need that seat. That's something that I'm sitting in and for quite some time. And here's where our coordinators that look at these levels, where would you put yourself? Where do you, here's where we're having had a really good conversation. She took the steps to manager from coordinator. And ultimately she decided that we weren't the right, and ultimately allowed us to understand that we wanted to outsource most of this as a firm as well. But it was a really good conversation. Both parties felt better about it because it was clarity. And so what we knew is, like, we need to make sure we have this available for everybody in that seat or in any seat, is that they understand, where am I now? What is expected? How am I measuring on that? And then what are those next steps on where am I going?
Yeah, the power of this, right? This is Tiffany's version, the power of the standard, however you, right, customize it to your situation, is that you're answering the fundamental human question. Remember, we're all just trying to get our needs met at any time. And anytime someone meets perceived resistance, perceived being the operative word, it might actually be real. right? The I don't know how to get ahead or what I do or that lack of clarity. And by the way, we all just want people to have open, mature conversations and tell us exactly how they're feeling in a really calm and objective way. But we know, again, people, feelings, and money make that usually not true, which means we have to own sitting in that seat, which means we have to answer the fundamental human question that people need to have answered. You know how to answer this question. And it is, how do I get ahead? How do I get my insert changing needs met, right? I want to grow over time. I've bought a house. I want to do this. I've got kids in college, like, right? Their needs change over time. And if we don't have a comp plan that lets them know how they align their work and their needs from a compensation perspective and what the standards are, the only thing that's left is, hey, Jen, will you give me what I want? And no matter how reasonable Jen is, when she says no, Jen's the bad guy, because you're sitting in the space of me and my money and my feelings and my needs getting met. That's why creating these ladders is so valuable. Because if we don't, oftentimes people show up after 365 days and say, I should get a big old raise because I've been here 365 days. And because we haven't set a standard that says, unless that time in the chair has increased your compensation, your contribution outside of right cost of living adjustments, what is the merit or the basis for increasing your compensation? And so that's where we want to set the standard. Hey, to get to that next level of comp, here's what's required. And then your performance reviews don't become you did good or bad. They become what's needed in the role. What are your goals? How do we partner to create success? And then we define standards and measures. And to Tiff's point, we check in on them. And then when we sit down next time and they say, hey, I want more money or I need this job, I think I'm ready, we can go, well, the common language says, not exactly. Hey, the standards weren't met. We need to meet the standards. So instead of me not giving it to you, it's the bar hasn't been met. Now, how do we partner together to raise the bar? Tiffany will tell you, if you have to do that too many times, you probably don't have the right person. Outside of that, we've taken all the entitlement, expectation, explanations, even when it's not their fault, by the way, because it's important we provide that for them. But all the things that result when we don't, we need to take ownership for. So by creating all this transparency, we're surfacing any issues. And Tiffany can tell you, when they made all these changes, they had issues. Not everybody came along. Not everybody was aligned. But I think what she would tell you is it's been wildly worth it relative to the change in the investment, the culture. As she shared, like, now all their team's goals are growth related. Like, everybody's gotten through the hard part and they're like, ooh, we've got time and thought to grow, which as a founder is really exciting. So again, creating that clarity is just really, really valuable. So we want to make sure we've got the career paths. We want to look at growth and development. What are you doing to grow your skills, your talent, your mindset, your capabilities? Are we allocating time for growth? If people are working 50, 60 hours a week, it's really hard to expect them to grow, right, inside of their role. So how are we making sure that we allocate that time? And then this is, I think, so important, and Tiff can talk to this so well, is ongoing conversations and coaching. Big performance reviews where we sit down and, right, you should have some version of that. Because, but ultimately, if we're not really careful, they become, let me tell you what you've done wrong and need to do better. And if you listen to me at the end of it, I'll tell you how much more money you're getting. That is not a partnership. That is not an interaction that you or they get excited about, right? So when we create these standards and these career paths, it becomes a much more growth-oriented partnership conversation where we're looking at what the role needs and how they want to increase their contribution so that we can support that. And they become partners in it. Now it's a reciprocal relationship in which they share ownership and responsibility. And I don't know about you all, but every client I've ever talked to, that's what we want from our team. We want them to own it, be invested in it, and take responsibility for it. And so much of our frustration is aimed at them. And what I learned over the years, I think what Tiff and Jared has learned, is that's actually largely on us, because we need to create a space and a strategy and a structure where they have the clarity they need to know how they need to contribute, what the standards are, what they're going to be managed to, and have continuous conversation that's positive and empowered around how we get there better together, versus just getting upset with them when things don't go right and saying, but I need you too, right? So it's a real shift from command and control to really mentoring people into that next level. Tiffany, do you want to talk a little bit around just the review process that you all have put in place and why you think they're so valuable?
Yeah. And Nicole, this may answer your question that you just put in chat too on example on how to allocate time for growth in a team member's role. But so personal feedback in real time, we really want to save those performance reviews to a place to get like super clear on like career aspirations and where we're at with them and those types of things, not to spend time on management stuff. We want to honor our team as well as ourselves to do management in real time. And so in those times, it's like if something is if you haven't read 1 Minute Manager, read 1 Minute Manager, but how do you just, you know, hit something head on in the moment to give opportunities for growth and fixing things and improvements and challenges, as well as don't forget the rewarding side. Sometimes we can get really focused in on the consequences. We do that in real time. We also do very systematized check-ins with our team. So every week we have the all company connection where we're sharing information and getting in alignment as a team, having very open conversations. And then as managers, we have one-to-ones or one to small team connections every week or every other week based off of the needs of that position and any sort of check-in there. But in there, we're definitely diving deeper, like, hey, what, you know, where is this project at? Where is this being held up? How are you feeling? Right. We're getting an idea of maybe what's happening in life that could impact business, those types of things, because life happens. And how do we ensure that we have the systems to ensure client experience while allowing us to be human all along the way? And that we're ensuring priorities. If there's a lot of plates spinning, we're helping, you know, make decisions regarding those plates so that everyone can prioritize and feel effective and not get to their freeze or flight stage where stuff doesn't get done because they're just in a state of overwhelm. And then we have the quarterly formal reviews. You'll see some examples in that. We have it built into a text system called Lattice. We used to run them on Word documents, but where they self-review. How are they feeling? What are they looking, you know, what were projects that they worked on that they felt really great about? Those types of things. They get peer review, like how did you collaborate with this person in the last quarter? You know, what did you feel really excited about? Those types of things. And then they get management review. So how did they show up from a behavioral perspective, from a career perspective and an outcome perspective? And then what's next? And ideally a majority of that conversation is focused in on like, okay, growth for them in career, because we don't want to miss those pieces. What are those next steps? How are we feeling? Is there needing any major conversation? We can have it there, but ideally we're not, because we're having those along the way. I don't know about you guys, but people bring their previous career traumas with them, and we're really trying to alleviate that to create the productivity. And how awful were performance reviews for a majority of people where they're like, I didn't know that I was off track. And then every 3 months, this manager comes in and is like, boom, just all of the excitement that you thought you were doing and where you were at and just crushing dreams. It's why we're like 1 Minute Management, because then it's just not hurtful. It's just like, hey, where, you know, what happened in this project? Or we didn't hit our deadline. Like, what can we do next time? Or what happened? And, you know, why didn't we hit our deadline and those types of things? And we hit those in the moments, and then they're not coming in their performance review with anxiety or all those things. We also, you can or can't, but we no longer tie our compensation to a performance review. We've separated the two. We've done some studying on that, but we do a compensation review once a year with outside of promotions. So we're looking at that through the full lens of the investment, but the performance reviews are purely based on them showing up every day. And it's not a compensation conversation. It is effective to do that as well. We did run that for many years. However, we have really learned to love the separation of that. Cause oftentimes that money piece comes in there and you can't have some of the conversations around just career pathing or growth or all of those, like the money can take over. And so having that as a separation has been really healthy for us as a firm. But as you can see, it's systematized into what it's the same way we run the business. What are those big goals? Have we set space for that? Work on them, like, you know, on them, not, you know, in the business, but on the business with them. Then what are we doing along the way to ensure that those systems are working really well? They're supported. If anything's happening in their life, we can support them and we can ensure the business is a good standard. And then, of course, just personal feedback along the way. We've normalized feedback. We've normalized opportunities to grow and learn because we're just honoring that space of hitting it along the way.
And I think the highlight there is that, you know, you hear us say all the time at Limitless that feedback is your friend. I think where Tiffany and Jared have, they've really excelled across the board on the people side, but this idea of making it's continuous feedback in a positive, curiosity oriented way, right? It's always, hey, how could we have, and had we thought about this? And again, if you've got the wrong people, you will ask so many curiosity questions before you realize, right, they can't sit in the space of answering them or accounting for it. And then you'll address that in a separate process. But that kind of ongoing, real and relevant feedback is really powerful. And that's work, especially in a virtual environment. For those of you, many of you do have remote employees. We used to be able to do that right in the office in real time. And so it tends to kind of fall into the gap. And so that's where things like weekly check-ins or right touch bases with people or just being in the habit of saying, hey, can you grab 5 minutes at the end of the day, is really asking yourself how in that virtual environment you're going to implement that kind of real and relevant feedback in a much more timely basis. Because to Tiffany's point, once it's 24 hours old, it's old. Like, and if it's a quarter or 6 months or a year old, let's be honest, you sit down for performance reviews and you know people are underperforming. You just can't even remember what you need to put in the review, right? Because you weren't taking copious notes along the way. And so that's where that relevant feedback, whether it's right in Asana or Word Docs or systems like Lattice, there are a lot of really great systems now that make this right just organized for you, right, where you can capture and review that feedback over time. So those are things to look at just from the technology perspective as well. Managing performance is really all about, do you have clear expectations? Are you doing that real-time assessment, having continuous feedback? So you want structure and that, right, you want a culture of ongoing feedback. So get really clear with yourself how you and the team are going to share that. And then what are the measurable goals? That's where job descriptions, outcomes, career ladders, standards by level, right? At level, right? You're as a service advisor, your expectation as you implement the service model. As a rainmaking advisor, the expectation is X, right? So we really want to make sure that we set those standards. And then when performance isn't optimal, because that does happen sometimes, we want to ask ourselves some really basic questions. Our easy answer is to get in the place of reaction and to get frustrated and upset and annoyed and bothered. We all sit there. The leadership space is, what's the process breakdown? What's beneath the behavior? Can I get alignment and agreement around, right, what we need to do to get to a better outcome? Instead of saying, hey, you did this, or here's how you need to do it, can we say, hey, the role needs this? How do you think we can better, right, meet that need in the future? We have to have some yardstick for measuring against. So Tiff, I want you to talk about this next part, because you just always, I love the way that you put this and it's kind of your thing and I don't want to steal your thunder. So this is like a series of questions that Tiffany always asks when there are people breakdowns. And I just think it's really a simple framework I really love. So Tiff, do you want to share that with everyone?
Yeah, and I'll give credit to Jared because he trained me on this coming in. I think just as owners and just trying to run the business and different things, like we can really, it's easy to focus in on like people being the problem versus like kind of pulling it back and being like, man, it could be a process breakdown. And oftentimes it is. And so we have a very specific order anytime we're seeing any level of breakdown. And it's, was there a process in place? If no, start there. If there was a process in place, is it a bad process? Does it actually work well, or, you know, did it work and now it needs to be broken based off of how we've grown and changed as a firm? Was there training on it? So it could be no process, bad process, no training. Is it the wrong person in the wrong seat leading that? Like, so, and then we get to wrong person. So we exhaust those first four things before we get to the person. And what that allows us as leaders to do is to pull back from being like, oh, that person, they didn't get it done. And I'm just going to do it too. Like, okay, let's go back to like, was it set up for success or were they set up for failure? And we can do that in a really effective way. And not only that, but with no process, bad process, no training, or lack of training, wrong person, like those three things, there is co-ownership on that, right? Like, hey, we have you in the seat, like, you know, how many times, or we can work through that together. And now we're going to work to create this in a way that we both have agreeance that this is how this is going to operate going forward. Are we clear? Yes, we're clear, which allows for a standard of accountability going forward and then performance. And it makes it feel like, you know, you're not just coming to them and being like, I am frustrated. You're the problem. Right. And that's not a place that we ever want to be, because now we're just really hurting productivity.
Well, the thing that's so powerful about it is it's just a very clarifying set of questions, right? No process, process breakdown, bad process. You can usually answer that pretty quickly. Person, wrong training, wrong seat. Those are pretty much the only options, right? And then you can really direct your remedy efforts to the place versus all the energy that we spend getting really frustrated about the breakdowns and the perceived blame that we align with them. So again, just in the interest of time, right? Performance reviews, you're going to apply them on a more structured basis, but also ongoing feedback, ongoing check-ins. So these are some of the bullet points of what are the things you really want to cover and talk about in some of those conversations. There's a list of sample questions, sample forms. There's skinny, simple forms. There's check-in forms. There's the big robust forms. And again, there's a lot of now software and apps that will do all of that for you, but the resources are there for you to implement when you're ready to implement those.